Guys, I'm not going to lie, going into this new golf season, I wasn't like over the moon excited about the Rogue driver from Callaway. You've heard me talk rave about my Epic driver that I put in the bag last year, significant upgrade over a driver I'd had for over 5 years, and just didn't, I loved it Epic. I didn't necessarily feel like I needed to change. Callaway, of course, sent us some Rogue drivers, and I tried it out for the first time today. And I couldn't believe that it somehow got better. And I swear to God, I'm not just saying that. It felt longer. It felt like I was more in more control of it. The main difference between the Epic and the Rogue is the more forgiveness. And I stood over a couple of drives, and I swear it just felt like cheating. I hit it in a hazard today that I did not even think was in play. So needless to say, I'm pretty excited about the Rogue driver from Callaway. Go to callawaygolf.com/jailbreak to find out more information about it. Pick one up for yourself to start the season. Let's get to the podcast with Brennan Porath.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. I think this is going to be kind of an eventful one. It's 8:30 on the East Coast on Sunday night. I know that my guest, he's on the West Coast. He's in L.A. And so it's only 5:30 around his time, but I'm positive you have a chilled monster next to you and you're ready to roll. Of SB Nation, Brennan Porath.
Chris, great to be back. You know, eventful day. It's 5:30 where I am, but I started this day in D.C. and left my house at 6:30 a.m., took a six-hour flight, landed, watched another like 6 hours of golf that I didn't anticipate needing to watch. And if it wasn't for, as you guessed, this Monster Zero Ultra I got next to me, a big one,
we got 32 ounces. New sponsor on the show.
Yeah, I couldn't be doing this right now if not for that, so...
Well, I was totally, well, first of all, we're recording this Sunday night and we just, the five of the playoff holes just concluded and we just decided to go for the recording tonight. I don't think things are going to materially change between now and tomorrow on anything we had to say. So unfortunately, we don't know who the winner of the Farmers Insurance Open is going to be, but it's pretty kind of easy to predict what we would say if either Jason Day or Alex Noren won this thing. So we went ahead and go for the recording while the takes are hot, because, man, that was quite an eventful conclusion to regulation.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I think, like, you know, you said you wanted to do this. I was, you know, outlining all my Tiger takes and which directions would go. And, like, the day kind of morphed in, like, four different stages there. You know, there was, like, the angry J.B. Holmes stage, like, you know, the Tiger kind of, you know, I tried to shoot 65 today stage. Then there's like the playoff, like, all right, this is like fatiguing. And then it was like the playoff, you know, this is lit. Like, it was just, there was just so many like ups and downs throughout that entire day.
I love how I think almost right when the Grammy coverage was supposed to start on CBS, and I have to go back and check the tape on the timing, but almost right when it started, if I remember right, J.B. Holmes stood in the fairway and waited for 4 minutes and 10 seconds to play his approach shot into the 18th. Then he laid up, after all that deliberation, from only about 250, if I remember right, missed the fairway on the layup. Afterwards was asked by Ryan, I'm assuming Ryan Lavner was the one that asked him, he tweeted this, and asked if he regretted making him wait that long. He said, no, I was trying to win the tournament at the time.
Which begs the obvious question, if you're trying to win, you don't lay up. You needed an eagle there, and he laid up into the rough. And that's not to mention, like, the layup was complete garbage, right? He just, like, pulled it left. I mean, he got his birdie, which, of course, is going to – he's going to walk off thinking, like, the results justify the means, and it doesn't at all.
Yeah, and I think he did clarify a second comment that, you know, he thought his best chance to make the playoff was to hole out from the fairway. So I guess it is what it is. I know that there's a lot of factors that go into that, and that shot is really difficult as far, because it seems like the ball always ends up on a downhill lie, and that pin is just impossible to stop it near. So there are those factors to consider. But, man, that whole thing was such a farce. It's like, I mean, I know that I've never been one to really harp on the emphasis of the 45-second technical rule that's in the rule book, just because I think there are so many things that can happen as a guy lines up a shot and just win factors and all that. And with everything kind of on the line on that 70-second hole, you can understand some delays. But 4 minutes is so egregious, and the fact that Alex Noren had to stand there in the fairway and wait to play his shot. He was tied for the lead at the time. A birdie wins it, and he had to wait for Day or for Holmes, who's one shot back and then ultimately lays up. That was just, I'm glad it didn't really materially affect the finish. I'm glad Noren didn't bogey or anything like that, but it's hard to say what effect that did have on the outcome.
Yeah, you were all over that with your tweet about how, you know, Noren kind of, you know, they waited for the wind to die, and then Noren, like, you know, shoots one through the stands and you know, into the scoring area. I mean, it's exactly what Holmes did in 2015. And like, there was a lot more at stake. I even understood it then. And, you know, he got on, he laid up and then two putted for par and lost in the playoff today. Like, this was the same, like, he's a big hitter and he wasn't even really in it. You know, he had bogeyed three of the last four holes before he came to 18. It's just like, you know, take a cut. And if you're not going to take a cut, you know, just bunt one up the fairway and don't take, you know, 4 minutes to do it. It takes a lot to really get, like, Jim Nance, you know, exasperated and mad at you. Like, he's you know, a nice guy usually on the call. He's not going to be too critical. Although, you know, Tony Romo's kind of, like, rejuvenated him and put a little extra bite in him. Hopefully that translates to the golf season. But, like, Faldo and Nance were, like, audibly exasperated and kind of all over him, and that's kind of no sure sign than that. Then you've kind of run everyone's patience.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I said he was down one, but he was down two. So yeah, he needed eagle to tie to even make the playoff. Day was already in at 10 under, and yeah, so that was horrible way to finish regulation. The fact that there was like millions of viewers tuning in right there just makes it that much more hilarious. Like, legitimately, probably the highest rated part of the day was, you know, all the Grammy viewers that were tuned in at that time. So not a great commercial for the game of golf, but I mean, what? How does a rules official justify not getting involved in some capacity in that? I mean, you take 50 seconds, you take a minute, you know, that's, you know, there's kind of this weird leeway with this rule. What's the point of the rule if 4 minutes is going to go by without a shot being played?
There is no point. You know, it's an empty rule. It's a hollow rule if you're not going to enforce it, or at least kind of enforce it reasonably. You know, there's like a lot of laws that are, you know, the reasonable standard and all this other stuff. I mean, but like, that was beyond the pale. Like, there is no point to having a rules official monitor that. And that is your clearest sign. That is like the most obvious violation. And, you know, we get all these millions of people trying to tune in to, you know, watch like Lil Uzi Vert, and they got JB Holmes twiddling his thumbs in the fairway. Like, they're trying to watch Rihanna or whatever. It was just like the worst possible advertisement for golf.
There needs to be like a sliding scale of some kind of the fine too. Like, if you know that it's going to like exponentially increase the longer and longer you take. I never want guys to feel rushed when they hit shots. But like, as you said, Noren had a hybrid in his hand, and then the wind had, you know, I guess while he was standing there, he'd changed and went up to a 3-wood and hit it so far over the green. Who knows what happens if he actually hits the hybrid, and, you know, maybe he hit it in the water and would have made bogey for all we know. But it just, you did kind of hate to see that play out. But after that, we ended with a three-person playoff: Ryan Palmer, Jason Day, and Noren. Day and Noren birdied the first playoff hole, and Palmer did not. And as we sit here, I think those guys birdied the 18th all three times, and then parred the 16th and 17th. So we're going to get into Noren for a little bit, because we've got a lot to cover in that regard. I'm going to make everyone that tuned in just for the Noren redemption tour or apology tour, I'm going to make you wait a little bit longer for that. But also for the Tiger stuff, because it somehow became kind of a back of the page story, but not the biggest takeaway from this tournament. But a lot of people had written Jason Day off, some of our friends. I'm not going to name his name in particular.
written off is like putting it mildly, like buried him, you know, in the ground.
Right. He's done a lot of things over the past few years that people have become pretty disinterested in him or actively rooting against him, if you will. Sure. But I don't know. I'm not the biggest J. Day fan in the world. I kind of was a much bigger fan on the way up in his trajectory, but I don't know. It kind of felt good to me to be watching him hit some of those golf shots out there. Did you have the same feeling?
Yeah, I completely agree. And we jumped to, you know, Mr. Above Ground Pool, JB, first, because it's easier to like yell about things and be mad about things. But, you know, the Noren and Day really kind of redeemed that frustration earlier on. I mean, it doesn't excuse it, of course, but I totally agree with you. Day can kind of be, I don't know, he can be, for whatever reason, he just doesn't resonate, you know, with us, with me, and I understand it's completely subjective in the same way that, you know, a DJ does or a Rory does or some of players who are, you know, play kind of have similar styles. And some of that's his personality and whatever it is, it's subjective. But it was cool. Like you said, it was awesome to watch those guys kind of exchange haymakers. Like at one point I was kind of like, this needs to end. But, you know, then it kind of, the energy, you know, the monster kicked in again. And in those last couple holes, I was all in for it. You know, I appreciated what they were doing given the circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many shots. I couldn't figure out the right way to word the tweet, but there was a close to double digit shots during that playoff that made me like audibly say like, wow, out loud. I'm sitting here watching by myself and was like, wow, especially yeah. That iron that Day hit out of the rough over the water on 18 to that pin and to hold it, you know, in not get it all the way back over that ridge. Like nobody hits their second shot into that spot. There's just no way to hold it there. I mean, and Noren is just flushing shot after shot after shot the entire day. I was really glad. You know, Noren had like a 6-footer to save par or to save his birdie there on 18 in the almost complete dark. I was really hoping he didn't blow it on that because that had been a horrible way for it to end.
Yeah, I was pretty tense when he was over that. I quite honestly assumed he was going to, you know, burn the edge there, just given, you know, that total darkness and the pressure of it all and that it wasn't that close of a birdie putt. But, right. You know, that's the thing. I think kind of we need to appreciate what we saw. Those guys were stuffing it, and obviously they kind of had figured out how to play the 18th, which is always – I don't know if that's like a danger of like repeating over and over and over again the same playoff hole, but, you know, it's not – the worst hole in a relatively benign, uninspiring course. So.
It's intriguing. There's a yeah. lot that goes into it. You know, there's suspense in every single shot. It's like, you know, is he hit the proper tee shot here to give himself a good distance to get on the green and two, or all right, he missed the tee shot. Now we know he's going to have a little flip wedge into this pretty interesting pin. Can he knock it close? Blah, blah, blah. It's intriguing. It's not,
yeah,
it's not like genius, but it is, it does make for kind of good drama. So, all right, let's switch to the big cat.
Okay.
I want to first ask, what were you expecting going into this week?
Missed cut.
Yep.
I mean, that's just, I you know, I didn't think it was a lock, but that was the expectation. I think, you know, we've gone through it a bit here. Torrey is not the most friendly place to come back. And he countered that notion with saying, well, you know, going to starting at, say, Career Builder would be tougher, maybe just as tough, because he knows he's got to go mid-60s every round just to kind of hang around or make the cut. He's got to be at 15 under, whatever the cut line was there Saturday night. So, you know, but I just thought, you know, and it bore out. He missed every fairway, and there's narrow fairways, and it's high rough, and I just didn't think it would go well. You know, I didn't think it would be a disaster. I didn't think there would be yips, sorry, but I thought he would miss the cut by, you know, 1 to 3 shots. That was the most realistic expectation. And we associate this course so much with, you know, 8 wins and the U.S. Open, but it's kicked his ass the last, you know, 4 years. You know, it's like the only time he's for sure played because it's the start of the year before he gets injured. And it's not gone well. So, you know, the recent history hasn't been the most kind. What did you expect?
I thought missed cut as well, and I'm trying to temper my reaction to what we saw with, you know, remembering that he needed a birdie, a pretty easy par 5 on the North course on his 36th hole to make the cut, right? So it almost was a missed cut. And on that hole, sprayed a drive way right, but hit it like far enough right that he actually had a shot into the green. It was kind of a dirty birdie, if we're willing to admit it. Having said that, there were so many awesome signs from that weekend. I mean, that Saturday round, I mean, first of all, and I actually thought like the way that it was covered from like, maybe I've just trimmed down like my Twitter following list to like people that I can tolerate. And that I thought the coverage was actually like really good, really fair. And nobody got too deep on either extreme or anything like that. And it was just enjoyable. It was like, all right, Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon rolled around. It was like, I got to get to my TV. And I know I, of course, do this full time now, and I should probably even watch more golf than I do. But this was like appointment viewing to watch Tiger on a weekend, you know, at Torrey Pines and in a real PGA Tour event. And, you know, maybe he like had 3 strokes gained. He had to have led the field in strokes gained putting on Saturday, made everything he looked at. The swing speed and like the recoils and stuff, to me, like it almost feels like he's just kind of showing off at this point, right? Like, look, this the back is not an issue, and I'm gonna push it to the absolute limit. Did you ever get that sense?
Yeah, it's like something I've heard. It's like called tour sauce. You know, this little like recoil. It's a, I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but yeah, I think he's putting a little extra sauce on it. Like it's not,
which is great. Which is great, totally.
Yeah. Not the most like necessary. And by when you say coverage, you mean by like tweets, right?
Yeah.
The tweets can get really grating when Tiger's playing. It's just a lot of the same stuff said in a different way. But yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's cool to see him going full bore. It's cool to see his short game actually be an asset again. It's cool to see, you know, in turn rounds of 75 into whatever, 70 or, you know, 73 into a 70 like he did. He even said he should have been in the 80s. I think Lav tweeted that too. And I just, you know, you called it like a dirty birdie, and I think that's right. But I wrote about this for tomorrow morning, so I'm stepping on it a little bit. But I thought like that was really kind of a triumphant moment. And you tweeted about, I think in the moment, how like you were feeling some feels.
Yeah.
You know, when he was walking off the green, grinning, and like, we joke a lot about Cat in like a good natured way. But that was legitimately cool to watch. And I'm getting a little sappy, but like that was awesome. It was, and I thought that approach shot, he hit it so far right. He was in like a matted down part of the rough, like you said. And that approach, like that bounced around the bunker. I mean, it cleared it by an inch, then like curved around it and scurried to the back of the green. Like, and all these prior failed comebacks, these like depressing slogs, that hits like the top of the bunker and rolls back in, right. And you know, he doesn't get up and down. Like that was just a moment, and it's again subjective, and we're not going to talk about like Tiger magic, like that's nonsense. But like, it was a moment that made this comeback feel a little different to me, just because that whole Friday felt a little depressing from the double bogey. You know, we took an unplayable early on. It just kind of felt like we were going to play it out and he was going to go home early. And that would have been fine, but it just felt like a little kind of disappointing. And for that shot to clear it by whatever it was, a foot, you know, just felt like kind of a different outcome than all these previous comebacks. Usually it would just roll back in.
Are we sure there wasn't like a CBS exec down there with like a little mini trampoline, like bouncing that ball up over that bunker? I think like, you know, I don't want to pretend to be like I've always viewed Tiger as a robot. I've never really viewed him as a human. And I kind of think like the way I view his comeback, I see it much more from a human perspective. And sure. I just feel like he's so much more relatable now. Like we've all at some, you know, we all have, you know, our adversity and whatnot in life. And for so many years, he didn't really have real adversity. And he, you know, it kind of going back to, I remember like when his dad died and watching him win the 06 British and, you know, Stevie, like he goes and gives Stevie a hug after the round, and Stevie like goes to pull away from the hug, and Tiger doesn't pull away. And I remember just being like, you know, looking at that and thinking like, there's, you know, as weird as it is to say it, like there's a human in there. Because again, that's just not the lens I've always viewed him from. So for now, to think about all the things he's gone through with these injuries, and I don't know, it's always the top of the news cycle, but I think it is just easy to forget that there's, I don't have the number, is it something like 14 surgeries or something between his knee and his back? And at 42, like who else is coming back from that, other than what is probably the greatest player to ever live? You know what I mean? Like this could all be over. He could have caved it in. And as of 4 months ago, he's only hitting, you know, 60-yard shots and whatnot. And here he is, like, you know, not having played a weekend in almost 3 years, and he's walking off that 18th green. The crowd is overflowing, and he gets that nice long walk, and they're just kind of saluting him that he just birdied the last hole to make the cut. That was awesome. That was so cool. It did make me feel the feels, and it was a Friday afternoon. I don't know how many people were watching, how many people were at work and whatnot, but it was great, and it set the scene, you know, for several more great moments of the weekend. And I mean, I think, you know, without getting overexcited about it, I think it was great to see. There are some concerns with the game. I know a lot of people were reacting pretty strongly to the way he was driving the ball. He did hit like 21 fairways for the week, which is just comically low. Maybe, I think it was maybe like 17 fairways or something.
Yeah,
like that. I didn't think he drove it very well in the Bahamas. The little bit that I saw, those fairways are just way wider out there. And the fairways at Torrey are not that wide, and he's lashing with driver, and guys typically miss a lot of fairways, you know, at Torrey just in general because it's narrow. But I didn't think it was like that drastically worse than the Bahamas, but you probably saw more in the Bahamas than I did. Was it that noticeably worse?
I thought so.
Okay.
I mean, I thought in the Bahamas it was like, I know the fairways are wider, but there were so many, you know, even, I guess maybe I'm biased by that one that he just
moved
directly up the chute onto the green. You know, he also switched drivers since then. I'm not like a gearhead or going to get into if that matters at all, but like, I don't know that I would have done that based on the way he was driving it in the Bahamas. I thought, you know, he looked, I think it was noticeably better in the Bahamas. And you know, you talk about him being like relatable, more human. I think that's certainly there, but I think he's just more sympathetic. I think he could still be a robot. Maybe, you know, not the nicest person, or he's a great person. I'm not saying he's not the nicest person, but right. He, you know, some people certainly will say that and are Tiger haters, but I think he's just sympathetic whether you hate him or not. And I'm not sure, like, because he was the greatest of all time, I'm not sure like it allowed him to kind of slink away at 42. Like he might have felt compelled to attempt the comeback. You know what I'm saying? Like it just, maybe he wasn't afforded that luxury, like to just kind of go quietly, like the Marco Mirror, whoever, you know, just some other guy. He can't just really like go away quietly. He's got to be like, are you coming back or not? Or are you done or not? And I don't think I've written about that before. I don't think that's really fair. But again, you know, maybe just because of his stature in the game, it almost like compelled a comeback attempt.
Yeah, no, and I forget what I was talking about this weekend, but it was like, you know, why would he come back? Why do you want to continue doing this? And you know, not why wouldn't you just walk away? But it's like, he's already kind of gone through the worst embarrassment you can, both from a personal and from a golf perspective. Like,
I hope.
Yeah. Well, I hope. But like, but what happened at the, you know, he shot 85 at Memorial, the bladed chips in Phoenix, and the top 3 wood at Chambers Bay. And like, in his mind, he's got to be like, all right, it could be just as bad, this comeback. Like, I might be topping shots. It might be really awful. But no matter what happens, if I quit now, people are going to remember the conclusion of my career being those tops and that terrible, just horrible end. Or, you know what, I have a chance to at least show people I still had something at 42 and into my 40s and I could still be competitive. I don't know if he's going to win. I think I'd feel a lot better about it if, you know, he was hitting a ton of greens and had a bunch of 15-footers and just nothing fell, than I do sitting here knowing that he made a ton of putts on the weekend and it was kind of scrapey and it was, you know, it's easy for, you know, if that part of his game wasn't fully there, for that to have spiraled out of control pretty quickly. So does what happened here this week change any way you view his 2018 season?
I don't think it does. I think it's a reaffirmation that this comeback is a little different and he seems to be in a better spot. I don't think we can kind of get carried away and extrapolate that, you know, he's back or whatever that means. That's an empty term now. But I think, you know, it's an affirmation that he can play, that, you know, this comeback is different and there's more optimism that he can play a full season, a full schedule, make some cuts, post some top 25, post the top 10, maybe win. But I think it's just, there's just optimism for it. I don't think it's like a guarantee that that's going to happen. I think there's just, it's just more encouraging that it's possible that he can play a full schedule and be a competitive golfer on the PGA Tour.
I mean, he finished tied for 23rd. Like, I just,
right.
just am realizing that now. Like, it's just remarkable. It really is. That's just, it's awesome. Not only made the cut, finished tied for 23rd. At one point on that, I almost fired off my, my almost weekly text that I send to our group. But what if he won? Because at one point he was like within six of the lead, which again, I knew that there was no chance of it. But it was just, I don't know. It was great to see him out there in the red, even if it was a blade collar. He just, he looks, as weird as it's like, he just looks great. He looks great from a physical standpoint. Like, his body looks very healthy. I feel like his face even looks a little bit younger. And man, might be getting in too deep now, but there was plenty there to get excited about. Definitely noteworthy of discussion. Again, I think the conversation can spiral out of control a lot, but that was great. I think it was very encouraging. What do you think? What's a realistic finish for him at Riviera?
I mean, again, same issue. Like, there's not a lot of room to get wild with the driver. So I think realistic, I guess, best case scenario, I think, is top 25, you know, right. Top somewhere between 15 and 25. You know, he's the host. You got all that that goes along with that. And all his people are there and stuff like that. So I think that's a best case scenario. Realistically, I think he's probably fighting for the cut line again Friday. Yep. I mean, I think that's the realistic.
Yep. Approach. I think a made cut at Riv will be harder than at Torrey. He's got such a better history at Torrey. And that's what, you know, as good as the putting was, a part of me just wants to wonder out loud, how much can you attribute that to just so much experience putting those greens? You know,
sure. I
mean, sure, putting feels kind of come and go. But when it comes down to it, he just knows those greens, knows that Poana, and he knows those exact surfaces. Riv, he doesn't have nearly the experience there and nearly the success there. So, the greens are a bit smaller there, and you can't, from my perspective, I would say you can't really get away by hitting really wayward shots there as much as you can at Torrey. Cause I mean, some of his shots, again, were so far offline that they actually ended up with decent lines and stuff. But I think Riv just a little bit more, opposite end of the spectrum when it comes from an architectural standpoint, as far as positioning yourself and getting yourself the proper angles into holes and whatnot. So it's going to be a much better ball striking test than Torrey Pines was, I think. But I hope he makes a cut. Obviously, I think that's that doesn't really change my personal goal, I guess, whatever, for that tournament. But it'd still be a made cut would be a success in my mind.
I heard you say feels. How great was that? That he's just throwing those left and right. Just
My feels are all off. It's great.
He used it three times in about like 25 seconds with Dottie on Saturday. And then today, it's so incredible. He finishes like this slog of a round, like just grinds out a 72. And he goes, he just says like, I was thinking 65 would get me in the playoff. It's like incredible. You can't stop laughing.
He was right. Amazing. It would have.
Yeah, he was right. But I mean, come on. I love that he just throws that out there afterwards.
I mean, it truly, you know, it truly, we always make fun of the, you know, I wouldn't be here if I didn't think I could win the tournament. But man, that is maybe just a truly special mindset he has. All right, that's enough on the cat. All right, it's time. We're going to address Mr. Alex Noren in this scenario. Before I say anything, I want to ask you, what did you think my take was on Alex Noren?
I mean, this has gotten so confusing and mixed up. And between this, and I'm not just trying to be nice here because you got me on your podcast.
But, let me hear it.
Like, I'm kind of like confused by all the people who tweet at you about like, one, your Ryder Cup thing. You know, Americans are going to win, you know, in a landslide, which wasn't your take, as far as I know.
Correct.
And I don't think, as I understand it, your Noren take wasn't that he sucks at golf or he's never going to, he's garbage. He's never going to win on the tour. Or he's never going to get better or win, you know, anything important. You just thought like his ranking at the time seemed incongruous with, you know, and not commensurate with what, you know, he had accomplished. And, you know, that didn't mean he sucked. And that's my understanding of your take.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better because I'm starting to realize, or maybe I'm starting to think that like I've just totally screwed up how I've said it. And I'm willing to take the blame on that I've not delivered my message very well, because clearly a lot of people almost entirely on the European side of the pond think that I despise Alex Noren and tag him in every tweet and say like, why do you hate Alex Noren? Or you were wrong about him and all this. I think you're right. And what I've tried to say as my take was at the time, I think it was when he was like eighth in the world. My point was, I was like, I don't think he's a top 10 player in the world. And I think there's 10 players, 15, 20 maybe behind him that I would take over him. That was my point. And that I think that what has been, again, scientifically proven by like somebody like Mark Brody with like pretty much irrefutable data that the official world golf rankings have a bias towards people that play outside of the PGA Tour. That's like a fact. I'm not going to, like, you could do a whole podcast as getting to the conclusion as to why that is the fact. But if you read like Brody's 19 page Columbia University paper, which I looked at today before I made this take or made sure of this take, like that is the conclusion that is reached, and it's really hard to debate it. So by winning all the tournaments that he won, he had skyrocketed up the rankings. And I thought, you know, he hadn't like played the weekend of a major during that measured time period and made it to the top 10 in the world. That's where I'm like, something's off here in general. The take was, obviously you don't win 4 or 5 European Tour events in a short period of time if you're not extremely talented. And the events that he won were fantastic events with really good fields. My point was like, you know, getting the points for the wins just drives you way up the rankings. And if you're not, you know, beating Dustin Johnson and not beating Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and those guys on a regular basis, I have a hard time seeing you jump past them. So I'm thrilled to see him coming to the PGA Tour and, you know, playing here on a more complete schedule. And I really enjoyed watching him today. Like, he put on a stripe show. He was a machine, and he's been a machine in almost everywhere he's played. The take was never that he was not a great player. I don't like necessarily, I wouldn't put him in the same bucket as Tommy Fleetwood, definitely not as Jon Rahm and some of the top European players, but like one of the top 10 players from Europe right now, of course I would. I don't know. That's kind of like where we stand. I part of me thinks people are just trolling me and messing with me, and it's like, but it's like, it's demoralizing. It's like you can't even have a take anymore without it getting totally misconstrued. And maybe I've just been terrible at making it, but man, that was not fun to like watch, like read all that crap. And I'm like, I'm not even rooting against him. I'm really not. So
yeah, I think like you could, like, two things can be true at the same time, you know, like obviously it's just like there's little room for, I don't know, you know, interpretation or nuance, I guess. It's like, you know, you could say, I mean, he won the BMW PGA. That's a big event. There were some big names missing in that last year. Like, that doesn't mean it wasn't an accomplishment, or it doesn't mean he sucks, or he doesn't have big things coming. Like, it's, that's the thing. It's like you're saying, you know, Alex Noren's a fad. But that's not what you said. He's like, I'm just not sure where he's slotted right now.
Right.
Is commensurate with what he's done. And that doesn't mean the future's not bright.
Exactly. So. Thank you. God, I needed to have somebody else on though that was willing to like disagree with me, because it's too much. We're too much in. I needed to take at least a couple punches on this apparently. But I mean, in general, his ranking has leveled out. Like, since that crazy winning spurt, he's now 19th in the world. I think that's a very fair ranking, by right behind Tyrrell Hatton, right in front of Brian Harman. Like, I don't see, I have no qualms with kind of him being in that area. So. I honestly do think that maybe this is the conclusion, that there's a difference in getting to the top 10 in the world playing through the PGA Tour than there is playing through the European Tour. Does that make sense? And is that fair?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I mean, I you know, it probably doesn't sit well with some people, but it's okay to have a take like that.
Can I also say something? European fans not taking it very well that they did not win the most recent Ryder Cup. I'm just going to say that there is a lot of like inferiority complex going on right now. Yes, I'm saying this, like the amount of chirp we got after a very successful week for the European players in January, and saying like, don't you want to revise your stance on the Ryder Cup now? Was like, well, no, there's a lot of golf to be played between now and then. Like, I know, no, like. Have you heard anyone besides Shipnick's ridiculous column? Have you heard anyone say that the European team is not going to be strong?
No.
This is one single person.
No. This reminds me of I don't know if you remember, you were probably, you know, prancing about Holland when this happened, but when Alabama was going to the college football playoff last year, like someone got into their locker room and they had all this fake bulletin board quotes, and they were like, they weren't even like done well. It was like the most fake news. And they had like the one is just like on this 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. It's just Washington will beat Alabama because Alabama is overconfident. And it's like in quotes, and then it's attributed to the national media. That's all it says, national media. So this is what they had on their bulletin board last year. So I think, like, you know, kind of like celebrating the President's Cup win, they crushed the internationals. They were awesome. They crushed in 2016 at Hazeltine. They were awesome. Like, celebrating that has kind of been, like, twisted into all this, like, bulletin board material that they're going to roll in France. Like, I think that, like, it reminds me of this statement. Like, people are putting stuff up, fake quotes up on their bulletin board to then write an article saying, like, oh, you better slow down on all that crown their ass stuff you guys are writing about the USA. Like, no one has said that. They've celebrated how good they've looked the last two team events out. But no one's, you know, I think they're just kind of creating these straw men to write the article saying, oh, USA better not count their chickens before they hatch or whatever it is, you know?
Right. There's a quote, the headline of John Huggins' article for Golf World says, the Americans should be careful about what they say about the Ryder Cup. It could come back to haunt them. There is not one single quote in the article of any like American player saying anything of like overconfidence at all. And I do think it all could be tied back to Shipnook's column, which I think most of Europe thinks that I wrote. Like, people are all over me thinking that I've just declared that the Ryder Cup is dead.
Americans in quote. That's like national media.
Right.
But been quoting just national media, whatever
but,
that means.
Even Rory made a comment in Abu Dhabi, and I asked him about it. He said something like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, as easy as they think it's going to be. I'm like, do people really think that U.S. team thinks they can walk into France and just win easily? There's a difference between me thinking the U.S. is going to win, which is what I do think, and me thinking they're going to roll and stomp and they're guaranteed victory. And there's also a much bigger difference than like the players thinking that they're going to walk in there and win. I don't think there's a single player that thinks that.
Yeah. Yeah, I I think they're confident and they're buoyed by their last two wins and feel like this is as good a chance as any. But of course they don't think it's just going to be, maybe there's one or two kind of, you know, idiots on the team. I don't know. I'm not naming names.
Oh, I wanted you to.
I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but of course maybe there's some guy who's overconfident or kind of over his skis about it. But no, I don't think anyone really on the team assumes they're going to just crush him. Okay. But can I take the reins here for just a second?
Oh, absolutely. You're Mr.
Ryder Cup.
Absolutely.
We're going to weave Cat in here real quick.
Oh,
so like, what is,
I'm doing the Elmo right now.
So what is the threshold? You're Mr. Ryder Cup. And it's January, but we're allowed to do this.
Oh, yeah.
What is the threshold for him this year, like, to not make the Ryder Cup? Like, how bad does it have to be? Like, because I think, like, you know, if he plays a full season, does he play the way that he did this week the entire year? Is he on the team? If he makes more cuts than he misses, is he on the team? If he posts a top 10 and doesn't win all year, is he on? Like, what is the threshold for him not making the team?
I would have not welcomed any Cat Ryder Cup talk at all before seeing this past week. As much as I was concerned with some of the sprays and, you know, some of the ball striking, like, there was enough to show me that there's a ton still there from a mental perspective and from like a focus. And as much as he said his feels were off, like, it looked like he had been playing a lot of golf, which we've not seen in some of the previous comebacks. So for me, it's like, okay, I don't think he's like super close, but I don't think he's really far off. I think I actually sound exactly like him by saying that. But we were talking about this at lunch today. I actually hadn't really thought about Cat for the Ryder Cup until today and started thinking about how interesting it's going to be if he sits at like 20th in the rankings or something like that. Or, you know, if he is at least threatened to win a couple tournaments from within that locker room, especially some of those younger guys that he's really bonded with. And, you know, he's tight with Jim Furyk, and he's tight with all of what the other assistant captains are going to be. the overwhelming voice from inside that locker room is going to want to say, we are absolutely taking this guy, if he's even close. So it's a really good question as to what is the threshold. If he's like 30th in the point standings, do they give him the nod? If there's not somebody there that's like screaming for the spot, you know, like, I don't know, this past Reddit, like in 2016, yeah, there wasn't like a, you know, Ryan Moore got that last spot. And, you know, as much as everyone screamed and yelled that he should get it, it was like, all right, Hazeltine's kind of a bomber's course. Is that really the best fit? And he kind of got the position by default by playing into it. But in that scenario, I'm saying, like, if Tiger's floating out there and kind of playing like this, from just a overall perspective, and how, as much as they shouldn't think of it this way, promotion of the event, and what that would mean to that locker room to have him on the team, I think they would go for it. And I think it's a, I think it's time to ring the bell. I think it's time to say it is a realistic goal for the end of the season for Tiger for the Ryder Cup. Keep in mind, I also said that about Bryson DeChambeau after one start in 2016. So I could be wrong, but I think it is at least reasonable to start thinking about it. Obviously, a ton of things have to happen between now and then for that to be the case, but I don't think that's unreasonable. Do you?
No. I mean, I think Tiger should have played in the 2016 Ryder Cup. I mean, God, he was supposed to start at the Safeway Open like 3 weeks later. I mean, just for crowd purposes, they didn't even need him. Get up there, hit one shot, you know, and the crowd loses their mind. It would have been as effective as Lee Westwood, you know, I think, like that week. So I think he should have played 2016. I don't know. It's an exhibition. Of course, it means a lot. But yeah, I think it's got to be, like, if he plays a full season, I really think that threshold's got to be bad. Like, he's got to miss, like, a lot of cuts, you know, and take himself out of the running. But I think if he plays a full season and he's healthy, man, it's going to be hard. There's going to need to be like a really, really obvious two captains picks, or, you know, four guys fighting for the two spots. You know,
it's four captains picks, isn't it?
Or whatever. Yeah.
Oh,
whatever.
Okay.
Sorry.
I've heard several people say two captains picks. I'm like, that, I don't think they changed it. I love that. They should have four captains picks.
Well, they got rid of the whatever.
No,
the
they didn't.
Horsel rule?
No, they didn't. That's still in play. And I they screwed it up this year because the timing doesn't work out the way that the Horsel rule really makes me upset. And I wrote about it when they announced they were going to keep it the same, but like they're going to, I have to go back. They make the pick before the Tour Championship now, I think. I'll look back
is
at that.
Is that it?
There's something.
There's no break this year, right? They go right to France?
Correct. There's a break before the Tour Championship. I'm going to have to double check it. I hope they don't make it after the Tour Championship. That would be insane. No, there's no way they could do that from a passport, even like travel arrangement perspective. So. But there is still something wrong with it. I forget what I wrote about it last year. I can find the article.
It's four captains. Yeah, four captains picks. You know, three after Boston and then one after Chicago, or one after, I guess it's Aronimi this year. So.
Oh yeah, so that was the screw up. Was, you know, they're essentially waiting one extra week to make that pick, that one final pick, even though it's still going to be. They're going to make it, and it's going to be like essentially 3 weeks before they start playing. It's not like this insane run like we saw Billy Horschel make, plus the gap. And like it's just, it's the timing is all messed up. And what's the point in delaying out that one pick? Just make all of your picks after Chicago. Like, there's no rush to make them. You give guys plenty of time. You have an entire off week, and then you have the Tour Championship, and then you go travel. Like, there's plenty of time to kind of set your team like that. So there's no reason to delay that one pick, but. And they do this rule for kind of, I don't know, perception purposes or whatnot, but
The best is when Big Cat doesn't even make the playoffs or gets bounced at Northern Trust and then just gets picked.
It's gonna look, man, so many columns are gonna be written about this throughout the course of the year, just floating the question. We're doing it right now. We're entertaining the discussion. I think we can at least get to there. All right, I want to talk about the broadcast.
Okay.
What did you think about, did you notice any differences, I guess I should say, from CBS, from potentially from last year to this year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Pro Tracer is like the most noticeable thing, and you called it out on the fairway stuff, like, you know, let's
top tracer, you know, people will yell.
Yeah, tracer technology. We're going to debrand that. It's just tracer technology. We don't need brands, you know, weaving their way in.
It was such a great name with Pro Tracer.
I know. I refer it to that.
I actually will too.
Every article I write.
I will too.
Everything. But yeah, like, you know, Fox obviously set the tone with that, you know, the mid fairway tracer. And, you know, that was like the most noticeable thing. And Nance made sure to tell us they showed 200 some shots on Saturday. And like, that's good. I mean, I think, you know,
Think about that? Like, to me, it felt like I was 50-50 on that when he announced that they're showing their 200th shot. I was like, all right, that felt, and I don't want to, you know, take it too seriously, but felt like, all right, I'm listening to you social media people that are, you know, killing us. Like they I know for a fact, like 1,000,000%, like 100% fact, that CBS is very well aware of the social media feedback. And I've said that a lot on the show. But, you know, for them to have at least responded in some way felt pretty significant. And I know people gave me some, I kind of gave a compliment on the broadcast and people were like, I don't know what you were watching. It was still terrible. It's like, there's not going to be wholesale changes. Okay. Like they're like, oh, commentary was terrible. Well, guess what? It's the same crew back. Like you're still going to get Gary McCord and you're still going to get, you know, the same people doing, you know, you're going to get Faldo doing his thing and Nance is never going to change his formula. Like, That's always going to be there, but if they're at least saying, all right, we're incorporating more technology, we're bringing ProTracer into the fairway, and we're going to show a lot more golf shots and at least tell you that we're going to show a lot more golf shots or show like at least an effort, that's at least progress and progress in the area that we would like it, like probably the most important area, I would think. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's fine. And I've been hesitant to like really jump on them in the past because I think like you can just, social media can be called from this like angry ball of groupthink. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. You know, CBS was, there was noticeably not as good as some of the other productions, but you know, I've been, I guess, less hard on them unless it was really bad. Like last year's Farmers was brutal and I wrote about it. And so I think like they have a PR problem or have had a PR problem. So I'm okay with Nance saying like, hey, we showed 200 shots because it is like they're just trying to make sure you're aware like, hey, we're trying and we're making a difference here. And I think so, you know, they're kind of combating the PR problem. I'm fine with that. And they're making strides. But I thought it was a good broadcast. I'm cool with it. I like Costas. I like Costas on Thursday because, you know, whatever he crosses over and does Golf Channel stuff. Like, I think he's important to have for a Tiger comeback like this when like, a lot of times you're not too into, you know, the minutiae of the swing or how a player is looking. But when Tiger comes back after a year, you definitely are. And is coaching himself and all this stuff, you want someone like Costas as opposed to, you know, some maybe friend of Tiger's or, you know, some guy's just giggling with them and stuff like that. Like Costas was really good in that regard. And then on the weekend, I thought, you know, they improved and stepped up. They got to do something about the first impression. You know, like their first impression is people coming in furious about the coverage gap, furious about having to like, you know, they do their intro and talk for 5-6 minutes before they show a shot. Like maybe that's just, there's nothing they can do about it. I think there probably is, but that's the problem. That's the first impression and it gets people pissed off and kind of can take away from all the improvements they make over the next 2-3 hours, you know?
Totally. No. And I think, you know, we've harped on the coverage gap and, we're understanding that it is from graphic switching from NBC broadcast, which is Golf Channel, over to CBS. My question, and that somebody tweeted this at me, sorry, I don't have the handle near me, but pretty funny how when the CBS broadcast goes back to Golf Channel for the playoff, there wasn't really much of a delay there. There wasn't much of an issue there. Why? How? And again.
Well, they use the CBS graphics for that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just on Golf Channel.
That's like, true.
It still kind of looks the same.
So,
but yes.
Aware of the fact that there is coverage available via PGA Tour Live during that time. And, you know, I'm usually watching golf at home and I'm able to get to that. So, and people are like, oh, you can watch on PGA Tour. I'm aware of that. Like, I know that. A lot of people that are watching golf, like today, I was at Freddie's first birthday party and it was during the coverage gap. And I didn't have PGA Tour Live available for me to watch. Like, TV was the only option. And for a lot of people, TV is the only option. As much as we are and emphasize how great a value and great of a product the PGA Tour Live is, it's not a realistic option to tell people to go from Golf Channel to PGA Tour Live to CBS within 30 minutes to like consistently stream. Like, you're gonna lose people throughout that part. So, and again, I think Bob Herrig chimed in and said, you know, clearly like this, or somebody said something.
Yeah, Like he was tweeting at me a little bit about it.
And what did he say?
It was confrontational way, but he was just saying, like, don't you think they would have fixed it by now if this, you know, were that easy a fix? They know people think it's objectionable.
Sure. And that's obviously, like, they would love to have the coverage, but just speaking from a broad perspective, this goes back to something regarding how they've structured their TV deals. And it ultimately all comes back to money, just in some way, sure, that, like anything does. But whatever deals they've worked out, and, you know, they're probably stuck in these deals, and they can't change the timing of the programming and all that stuff now. But that's what they agreed to do, and they've created a product in which, for prime time, pretty prime time, not the most prime, but some of the most important time of the weekend, they go off the air for 30 minutes. And it's just insane. It's absolutely insane. Again, I don't have a quick fix for it. I don't want to pretend to know what the next step to it is, but they've set up something where they take their product off the air. And, like, Tiger Woods was playing the 18th hole at Torrey Pines on Saturday, and it went off the air. Like, it was just insane.
Yeah, it's obviously accentuated by the circumstances this weekend. Like, obviously, you know, it's worse when Tiger's on playing his first weekend in 900 days than it is when, you know, you got, like, James Hahn, you know, on the fifth hole at the St. Jude, you know, Memphis. Yeah, it's just it was accentuated this year, or this weekend. And I don't know, I'm an idiot. I don't know if I was having trouble with the streams on Saturday. Like, I was on PGA Tour Live and had the URL, like, CBS simulcast, and all I was getting was, you know, Tom Hoagie putting out on the 14th, you know, it was featured holes stream. Like, I don't know if I was just, I fully would cop to user error, but I don't know. I was not getting really consistent coverage of Tiger during the gap on the streams.
So what happens if it's consistent with what I experienced in Europe, was for that 30 minutes, they go to what's like the world feed, like the PGA Tour world feed. Right. And it's actually kind of cool. Like, they literally pop around to the most random people you could think of on the golf course. That's probably why you're seeing Tom Hoagie or whatever it was. That may have been the feature groups, but I had the same issue. And you're talking to two people that, again, do this like for a living, and we couldn't quite figure out how to watch it. So how are, like, your somewhat casual viewers? And the PGA Tour seems very focused and almost obsessed with reaching the casual viewers more than their hardcore viewers. How do you expect casual viewers to, like, what, like, take the product in that time? I mean, I don't know why I thought it would get figured out. I really did. And that's probably on me. Like, that is on me. But
also, you could be at a bar. Like, maybe you got, like, you're out, you know, you're at a bar and you're watching on CBS, and you're watching golf is on at a bar because Tiger Woods is playing, and then it just goes away. You know, like that's kind of another issue there that you don't really consider because you're usually at home on your laptop.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I thought it was hilarious how often they did mention the Top Tracer as if it was like a new thing. That was like, that said so much to me of like, about how much they emphasized. It was like, guys, this has been here. And I know they've had it on certain tees and stuff like that, but that it's such a point of emphasis this year to, oh, we got the Top Tracer on this shot. It's like, man, Fox does this on every single shot. And I get it. It's different to do it not one week a year, but we see it mostly at the men's US Open, obviously. But to, like, you know, have it showing that was a possibility, and then it took them, you know, 3-4 years to get it in the same position with CBS was, I don't know. It didn't need to be emphasized as much that they're using technology. It's like, all right, we get it, Grandpa. Like, you figured out how to use your iPhone. Like, come on.
Hey, we'll start slow. They did a good job.
I know.
They
I know.
Better, and they should be commended for it.
Hey, they're listening. I gave them credit for the good things, but if they're listening, we're giving you plenty of other things to. Plenty of other things to continue to improve on. I don't think the coverage gap's going to get fixed next week in time. But for the most part, it kept my attention so much better. And that's the biggest takeaway. I don't know if there was less ad time, but it felt like it. And again, I don't know. Again, I didn't time it out, but maybe they just did better showing more golf course shots and stuff like that. The Ian Baker Finch Rogue sections, I probably can naturally work that product in a little bit better. That was not well received, but... But yeah, other than that, it was just entertaining. I know the Big Cat helps with the broadcast, and it just helps things flow a lot better. But I don't know. I'm excited after this past weekend. That got my golf juices flowing a little bit.
Yeah, and just quickly, they don't get – Torrey doesn't necessarily always promote, like, the most sexy and exciting broadcast. It promotes, you know, scenic shots of paragliders and stuff. But, like, the golf isn't, you know, true. This has been kind of – you know, hammered home this week again is the golf isn't, you don't get big birdie streaks or swings and things like that. You don't necessarily get a lot of implosions either. So, you know, it doesn't give them a lot to work with in terms of the course. And today the round's going 6 hours to make it really a kind of thrilling broadcast.
Every year it goes through the same cycle where, like, leading up to the tournament, people are like harping about how overrated and terrible Torrey Pines is. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. I mean, come on. Yeah. There's been some great moments. And then every year I watch the tournament, I'm like, oh, this is just, I can't get behind this kind of setup. Like, it's just not, it's not entertaining. You're exactly right. And, you know, Tron, a lot of people are making the point, like, Torrey just with that land could be so amazing. And it's just not. It's really just not an amazing golf course.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a good start. I think I love the West Coast swing. I think it's good. So, I mean, hopefully they kind of sustain it just like Big Cat. You know, Big Cat's health. Now we need to see it week over week.
Here we go. You're not going to Phoenix, are you?
No. A colleague of mine may or may not go, which could be exciting. Awesome. But I'm not going to go, I don't think.
There may be we might be making an appearance on Saturday at I've never been. I've never seen the 16th hole. I know it's been it's heavily covered, but I think just might be making it happen this year. It looks like it is going to happen. So we're not quite sure what's going to be in store for it, but it's going to be entertaining. I promise that.
Yeah, I've never been. Obviously, it's on the list. I'd love to get there one year. I think I'm going to do Genesis though. We'll see.
Nice.
That's the plan.
That's a good one to do. Anything we missed from the week?
I mean, I'm ready to do another 45 minutes on the PGA show if you're down for it. You know.
Did you? I deserve some kind of medal or badge because it was a goal of mine to go to the PGA show and not tweet once about it. And it can be done. I proved it can be done. I've never understood why people go and like just tweet a million things about it as if that's what like followers signed up for. Like it is the most like inside baseball of inside things you can do. And like it was entertaining. It was actually kind of amazing to go there, and we got to do some kind of cool stuff, and got to listen to Bill Kaur and David McClay Kidd. Little teaser for a potential podcast guest there.
Sweet.
Do like a luncheon and stuff, and it could even be a lot cooler as far as you know the things they set up from like a conference standpoint and whatnot. But it was kind of cool just that like so many people in the world of golf were in one place and. To kind of you know network a little bit and see some cool products and stuff like that. It was way better than I was expecting. I was actually dreading going, but we had a good time.
Yeah, that's my quick take. I think is like it's brutal if you're following from afar, like the content coming out of it, whether it's tweets or coverage on TV or anything like that's just rough. You know, here's you know tweet of the golf underwear product line of. So and so, and I think that's brutal. But I'm super intrigued actually by it being on the ground. Like I've come around on it. I actually think it would be cool to go to. It's just following from afar is you know nauseating.
And DJ's been to a bunch of them, but he said this was by far the best one. And I know a lot of the guys that are veterans of this thing said this year was by far the best one. So if you ever get a chance to go, I would recommend it. I'll definitely be back. So it was good enough time. But just don't overdo it. Just be cool. What else is in your notes? I don't want to sign off before we miss anything.
I think I
managed to piss the Euros off even more than usual in this one, I'm pretty sure. So we gotta fight fire with fire.
Tiger's outfits are a little off, you know, like the blade collar, like you expect that, but like the material, I couldn't figure it out. Like it was like he just looked way different in it than like Rory and Day do. I don't know if it was a little like baggier or what. Like the material looked like that Missy Elliott like video, like that Tupa Tupa Fly. You might be too young. You know?
I'm like 2 years younger than you.
Tron, I'm not saying it was baggy, but it looked like that kind of material.
Tron tweeted something like something about him wearing like a leather shirt on Thursday. I'm trying to find who said it. Somebody replied, he's actually wearing the skin of Stephen Ames, which was amazing. But
that's perfect.
The blade collar was just kind of, I don't know if he was like, if he, his last real comeback was pre blade collar, but man, I don't know what was worse, the mock turtleneck, you know, no collar shirt with the red or the blade collar, but. I don't know. I did get a couple of replies like, really? What's wrong with the blade collar? It's like, oh, my guys, come on.
I mean, if you, like, reasonably, if you should be, if you showed up at Augusta, they should tell you like the Planet Fitness is 3 miles down the road. Like that's a reasonable reaction if you saw someone roll down Magnolia Lane in that. Like that, like, and someone asked Billy Payne about it last year. I remember I was like losing my mind. It was so good. And he just, you know, I don't think he knew what it was, but that's a reasonable reaction to it. Nothing against Nike. Nike is like, I'm not trying to sell brands. Like I buy a lot of Nike shoes. I wear a lot of Nike clothes and my kids do too, but I just, I don't know, not in on the Blake collar. So,
yep. No, that's understandable. So, all right. I think we got it covered, man. Well, I guess this will be really the dumbest part, but who do you think wins tomorrow? It'll probably already be settled by people listening to this, but,
I think Alex Noren wins just so you can get tweeted at a million times.
I honestly hope he does win. I'm rooting for him to win. Let's power through this because I want to enjoy watching him play because I really actually do. I don't enjoy the pre-shot routine, but I enjoy watching him play. So I hope that Noren wins. But if he doesn't and Day wins, then we get to see Tron wiggle a little bit. So that'll be entertaining as well. So
nice.
So, BP, thanks for joining. I know that was much later tonight than we were planning with the late golf, but grab some dinner for yourself, and appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
Bye, everybody.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!